Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor with my colleague and friend Gregory Copley, editor and publisher of Defense and Foreign Affairs, writing most recently about utopianism. But within that, there is a term of art I realize I've been reading for my educated life, and I never stop to ask, what does it mean? Gregory, what is a post-industrial society? Where? Why? How? Thank you.
Well, it's been fed to us for futurists, by futurists for many years. It's a society in which the technology will take care of us. We don't need to do any work anymore because machines will do it for us. Computers will do it for us. We will live in the lap of luxury, never have to get our hands dirty again. And of course, what it boiled down to was meaning that that society, wealthy industrial, previously industrial societies, powerful Western societies and economies could outsource all of their dirty work to foreign suppliers. In other words, let other people get their hands dirty. We just give them money. And that's all very well. And it seemed to be going well. And in 1982, I think it was, we had Herman Kahn, the great American strategist, with a colleague, Dr. Pepper, wrote a book about Australia, Will She Be Right? The Future of Australia. And Will She Be Right refers to the Australian phrase, she'll be right, mate. In other words, don't worry about anything. Everything's going to sort itself out. And of course, Kahn said that Australia at that point was leading the way to actually becoming a post-industrial society, and had taken all the steps to de-industrialize, and this would not work out all right. It won't be all right. Australia would collapse as a result. Nobody paid any attention to that very, very important book. We raised it again ourselves. I did in a book in 2007 called Australia 2050, how can Australia survive to the mid-20th, 21st century? And basically, it was clear that Australia had deindustrialized for the third time in its independent history, and was going down the gurgler, as they say in Australia, down the drain. In World War I, Australia really massively vertically integrated its industry, and it had a huge mining and agricultural sector at that time, but they vertically integrated to be an industrial power, which helped them contribute inordinately to the success of World War One. After the war, the Brits said, "No, you can stand down now. We'll go back to selling you everything you need, so you deindustrialize," which they did. And then in the World War Two, again, they rose massively to meet the challenge. After that, the new parent, the United States, said, "Oh, you can stand down now. We'll sell you everything you need." And then again later, we saw this U.S.-led push to allow Australian industries to just become parts manufacturers for U.S. aircraft industry, the space industry, and so on. And Australia essentially lost control of its platforms. It lost control of its ability to refine its own oil and gas. What you've got now, for example, are two remaining oil refineries in Australia. So Australia is absolutely dependent on importing refined fuel, diesel and motor and aviation fuel, particularly aviation fuel. So, and recently a glitch at the refineries in Victoria near Melbourne meant that Australia had to cut off supply, its own supply of diesel oil, and the country was without diesel oil within 2 days. So Australia really went overboard with this. And we saw that this whole process of this utopianist or Fabianist view of being able to outsource everything and we just print more money and pay for it is absolutely illusory, largely because at some stage the value of the buyer's currency depreciates. as has been the case with Australia, and as essentially the case with the United States. So we slowed, because of all this process, we slowed down the rate of growth of these once industrial powers, and we come to a position where we're growing our economies at 1, 2, 3% a year, when inflation is running at 4, 5, and up to 9% a year, which means that these countries are really negatively moving in the state of things. We keep talking about economic growth, but in fact it's a statistical growth, but it's not a growth in wealth. So the rate of growth does not mean that we are meeting our obligations. People are individually becoming poorer as a result of this because of inflation. And the value of the currency, therefore, is depreciating as well. And that's what's happening worldwide. But Australia has been leading the charge in this, in a sense. So Australia's lost, since 2011, its currency has lost more than 40% of its purchasing power. So that gives you an idea, but it's the same in the United States. We're seeing the GDP of the United States seeming to grow inexorably, somehow implying that this was growth and progress. But the reality is that in real wealth terms, it's been declining. We keep also thinking that we can measure wealth through gross domestic product, which is not the case. Gross domestic product merely measures the trajectory and pace of the use of currency. So if you turn over cash more and more times and rapidly, then your GDP will grow, whether or not that cash has actually created wealth or not in the meantime. In the case of mainland China, for example, its rapid growth in GDP didn't mean much at all, because they were actually using projects just to create that monetary momentum and not to deliver wealth to the population. And the same is the case in the United States. So we've got this situation where we've been living in this la-la land since, I would say, the mid-70s, mid-1970s. And, you know, we're once in Australia and to a large degree in the United States, families could afford to buy a home with a single member of the family working. That's now, for the lower and middle class, that's now not really possible. You need two incomes to do that, and people are still mired in debt. And that's the other thing. What we saw this before the quote post-industrial movement was that we had a lot of money. We built up huge wealth, which enabled the United States and its allies to fight World War II. And we spent a lot of that wealth going through the post-World War II period. And this was the wealth built by our grandparents' sweat. But once that money ran out, we kept spending at the same rate and instead started borrowing to meet that spending habit. So now what we have is, of course, this massive debt. It built up in almost every country in the world, because when we made colonies independent in the 1960s, we encouraged them to move from cash-based economies to credit-based economies. So they took on debt, which they now can't pay. The PRC, Xi Jinping, really furthered that by creating the Belt and Road Initiative, where he encouraged countries to take on debt, to make them debt slaves, which was a fairly conscious move, where it was not even thought through properly by the West. But what we see is this massive now debt facing every country in the world, and increasing amounts of the government's income is going on debt service, which means that you can never lower taxes. So the answer to having spent all of our built-up wealth was to go into debt and then to force the citizens to pay taxes at an increasing rate to service that debt. So somewhere this has got to come to an end. Either you build an equilibrium between debts, the money for debt service and the build-up of debt, but we're not doing that. We're continuing to borrow. So if we don't slow down our spending, then we just go bankrupt in debt service means. All of our money goes not to healthcare or defense or anything, but it goes to debt service. So what we're looking at is essentially coming to our senses, transforming our economic models, or waiting for the implosion when governments can no longer service debt. And that's the real revolution, which is going to topple governments.
I tell a quick story. A columnist at the Financial Times, Rona Farouhar, speaking with a industrial leader, Democrat, in Pennsylvania. She calls him Jim. That's not his real name. She asks him what it is that is driving the New Deal Democrats of Pennsylvania, the manufacturing hub of the revolution, of the Civil War, of the First World War. The munitions factory visited by Mr. Zelensky is a remnant of the remnant of what Pennsylvania once was, the Keystone State. She asked him what can be done to bring the Democrats who've left the party and drifted towards populism and the Republicans, what can be done to bring them back? Jim said something surprising to me. I wonder if it's resonant of what happened in Australia. Jim said, the first thing you have to do is apologize. You abandoned us and went to China and overseas and Mexico. You left us behind and you got rich. Does that make sense in Australia, Gregory?
Absolutely, and it makes sense here as well, as you say. But the reality is that companies were virtually forced by the governments in Australia, in the US, in the UK, and in Germany to outsource their production simply because of taxation and other over-regulation by governments. And let me just hearken to a 1991 time frame.
We have a couple of minutes. Go ahead. 2 minutes. Go ahead.
Soviet Union collapsed. The U.S. businessmen, carpetbaggers, went over there to buy up what they could of the Soviet stock. They came back saying, it's insane. It's like the Wild West. And you say, why is it like the Wild West? They said, there's no rules. People just go ahead and do things. And it's uncontrollable. If you take that back to the Wild West in the United States, in 1865, at the end of the Civil War, a million dead in the United States, you had that Wild West period where the U.S. economy grew to become the biggest economy in the world by the early 20th century. We saw the same thing happen in Russia in 1910, 1912, the fastest growing country in the world because of it was just an open season for entrepreneurs. And we saw the same thing with Russia after 1991, massive growth because of the, quote, Wild West. And it gets back to John O'Sullivan's comment when the founder of the United States Magazine and Democratic Review in 1837, he said, the best government is that which governs least. Least government, of course, then leads to fastest and most substantial growth. That's where we built up the wealth, which we have now spent once again. And so in order to restore wealth, we have to go back to less government and more open entrepreneurism.
The disruption that we're experiencing now in America, is it a product of abandoning America for the factory floor in our enemy's camp?
Well, yes. I think most people in the American workforce, whether it's agriculture or manufacturing industries, feel no connection at all with the government and feel that the government is working on an entirely different agenda to what they were taught as children, that you get a good job, you do something worthwhile, something noble, and you produce products and everybody benefits. That's now an antique thought.
Gregory Copley, editor and publisher of Defense and Foreign Affairs. We're going to turn to our favorite moments of the week, the King Charles Report.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.